received information that this involves a second individual as well. We are still trying to verify some information, and this investigation is ongoing.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
Kevin Spacey is pleading guilty in his Nantucket, Massachusetts sexual assault case. The judge had some strict orders for Spacey.
This case has been continued to March 4th, 2019 for pretrial hearing at 11 a.m. The defendant's appearance has been waived of stay away and no contact with the victim and the victim's family.
Spacey is accused of groping a busboy back in 2016 at a Nantucket restaurant. This is USA Radio News.
If your New Year's resolution is to be healthier, it all starts with a good night's rest. MyPillow's best offer ever has been extended. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the end of the year special, you'll get the lowest price ever MyPillow has offered for their four-pack, free shipping, and their 60-day money-back guarantee has been extended through March 1st. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the end of the year special, use my promo code USA to get two premium MyPillows and two go-anywhere pillows. MyPillow.com, promo code USA.
Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez raised some eyebrows during a recent 60 Minutes interview when she said that she believes the rich are not paying their fair share in taxes. Take a listen to a portion of her comments from CBS's 60 Minutes.
Sometimes you see tax rates as high as 60 or 70%. As you climb up this ladder, you should be contributing more.
Paul Blair with the Americans for Tax Reform tells Fox News that he believes Americans, the rich, that is, do pay their fair share in taxes.
The top 1% already pay 37% of all federal income taxes. Break that down even further, the top 3% are paying over half of all federal income taxes as a share of all paid in 2016, which is the most recent data that we have. So her suggestion that only the tippy top should pay a little bit more because they're not paying their fair share just ignores the data on how much they are already paying as a percentage of the total share of taxes paid by U.S. taxpayers.
And regarding those high income earners, Blair says,
High earners have the ability to adjust how they are paid. It's not necessarily salaried income that they're making. They make this money in terms of dividends or investments that they make. And so you raise these taxes and people shift their investments to avoid higher taxes. And so what she would likely experience is no money to pay for a Green New Deal or infrastructure or any of the sort of left's favorite priorities for spending projects.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Weather this afternoon, a chance of snow showers, mainly after 4 p.m. Mostly cloudy with a high near 35. A southeast wind, 3 to 5 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 30%. Total daytime snow accumulation of less than half an inch possible. Tonight, a slight chance of snow, freezing rain and sleet before 11 p.m. Then a chance of freezing rain and sleet between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m. Then snow, freezing rain and sleet likely after 2 a.m. Mostly cloudy with low around 29. Southeast wind 3 to 7 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 70%. Little or no ice accumulation expected. New snow and sleet accumulation of less than a half an inch possible. Tomorrow, a chance of rain and sleet before noon and a slight chance of rain after 5 p.m. Mostly cloudy with a high near 48. Light southwest wind. Chance of precipitation is 40%. New sleet accumulation of less than a half inch possible. Tuesday night, rain likely, mainly between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 36. Light and variable wind west 8 to 13 miles per hour in the evening. Winds could gust as high as 23 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 70%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Wednesday, partly sunny with a high near 42. West wind 13 to 16 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 32 miles per hour. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, with a low around 29.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And our show, Mental Health Matters, has been on for a little over 7 years. I just looked up. So that's pretty interesting. But anyway, NAMI is, there's a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff. We work out of our houses. And we try to help people who either have someone in their family or know someone or work with someone who has a mental health issue, or the person who has a mental health issue, try to get the right treatment and line them up with the right doctors and so on and so forth. And we do this in various ways. We teach what they call a family-to-family class, which is a 12-week course, which actually is going to start on January 26th, which is a Saturday, and it'll run for 12 weeks from 9 to 11:30 at the Huntington Medical Center in Flemington, and it is totally free. All the material and everything we give out is free. There's no charge. You don't have to be a member of NAMI to take the class, but you do have to register. We also do support groups the third Thursday of every month for folks who either have, like I said, either have someone in their family or know someone or work with someone who has a mental health issue. And that's also free, and you don't have to register. You can just come. It's held at 52 East Main Street in Flemington, and it's from 7 to 8:30, and sometimes it runs from 9 o'clock, depending how talkative the people are. But everything we do is free, and you don't have to be a member of NAMI to do any of it. If you need some more information or you would like to reach out or have a question or whatever, you can reach us by calling 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We don't have someone man the phone 24/7, but we do have a lady who checks it at least twice a day, and we promise to get back to you. And now, Mental Health Matters is going to start, and we're very privileged today to have Carol Ricard with us. Carol is a licensed clinical social worker and a tobacco treatment specialist, a TTS. I know what that means now. And is also known as America's Wellness Ambassador. Carol is a dynamic and engaging speaker who brings to life practical and useful solutions to problems. Carol has written many books. I don't know how many now, Carol. Last I count was 9. Is there more than that now? Yeah. Okay. Well, you can tell us how many after. And she's written books on stress and has conducted national training workshops on stress and wellness. Used to be a weekly contributor at Esperanza. Do you still do that?
I still do.
All right. So yeah. You're still a weekly contributor. That's great. And Carol is also the founder and CEO of Wellness University. LLC. Carol and I go way back, and I'm so glad you took the time out of your busy schedule to come here and, you know, spend an hour or so with us. Carol, I know from my own personal experience how stressful being a caregiver can be.
Yes.
Would you speak to the stress of a caregiver?
Well, if you imagine this, I think, well, we were just talking, it's interesting, we were talking earlier. And I shared that I was born in California and then went to the Midwest to go to college. But I landed in New Jersey to become a caregiver for my mom.
Right.
And, you know, and it wasn't the first time. I actually was when I was 14 years old. I was a professional caregiver for my mom after my dad died.
Right.
And so for me, you know, caregiving, it's a firsthand experience that I've had. And I didn't deal with stress so well back then. But there's just so many pieces that go into that, depending upon who it is you're being a caregiver for.
Right.
There's their health issues, doctor's appointments, you know, just. But what's really important about caregiver stress is that caregivers often feel guilty doing something to take care of themselves.
Right.
Which is so important. Like, yeah. It's just so critical to, I mean, even when I was taking care of my mom, I loved the gym. So that was my one thing that I used to go to while she was still sleeping in the morning. and depending upon who you're the caregiver of, it sometimes is you're dealing with a loss before you've even had that person pass away.
Right.
In fact.
Right.
It's almost like survivor's guilt in advance. Is
yeah.
That what you're saying?
I mean, and you're there to take care of them. And so the thought of taking care of yourself, it's interesting because I did an interview, which is Women's World magazine, which is going to be coming out in February,
right.
Had reached out to me. And we were just talking and doing an article on caregivers and what gets in the way of caregivers taking care of themselves, that self-care, you know, and then what are some of the challenges and some of the tools. Because I approach stress that you can do something in as little as 60 seconds, you know, that it doesn't take a big, long time to do something. And I've said to many people who've been caregivers, even if you just take 1 minute in the bathroom for yourself, just undivided, just that kind of, sometimes you got to separate yourself from the situation just to be able to kind of come back to the situation a little bit too. So it really depends on who you're caregiving for that you're going to have more stress.
Right. And, you know, I try to tell people who are caregivers that if you're not taking care of yourself and you get ill, who's going to take care of your loved one? So if you like to read, take 15 minutes to read, 10 minutes. If you don't like to read, or you just go on a deck and look at the stars, you know, and just meditate, whatever, you know, take a walk if you like to walk, you know.
I think that is so critical for caregivers, you know, is to just take that little break to do whatever it is that kind of is something that you want to do. Because a lot of times you're also being a caregiver doing what the other person needs you to do.
Right.
May not be what you want to do.
No,
you know?
Exactly.
And so it's giving yourself a chance to do a little bit of what you want to do. Because here's the thing about it. If we don't manage the stress, two things happen. It's like a bottle of root beer. You shake it up, and the pressure builds up inside. And when you're a caregiver, guess what? It's constant, almost like constant shaking up. Problem is that people either explode or implode. And that's where I think caregivers run the risk of really, really kind of hurting themselves but other people. Let me give you an example. I did a workshop one time, and a woman, you know, kind of raised her hand at the end. She said, you know, thank you so much. She says, because she has a mom who lives with her, has dementia, and she has to tell her mom the same thing four times at the dinner table. And she kind of finds herself getting frustrated and frustrated and frustrated. And she said, I realize it's not her fault because she can't remember. She says, but now you've helped me realize that when I start to feel frustrated, I need to stop and go into the other room, let some of that frustration out so that I can come back so it doesn't come out on her as anger. And I say things that I don't want to say or I regret to say.
Right.
And we reach that point, all of us. Doesn't mean, you know, there's something wrong with it. It's just we all have an overflow point.
In a way, it's almost like if you're a caregiver, that's your job. So the needs of the person you're caring for are going to come ahead of yours.
Yep.
But you can't turn that off. It's not a 9-to-5-er. It's
24, depending upon the situation, 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing about it is it just as you wouldn't want to go to a doctor who was doing his job 24 hours a day, you'd want to know that they took that little break just to take care of themselves.
Right.
So that they could be their kind of their best for them. Yeah.
And, you know, it's not always, you know, a lot of times people think, okay, they put their loved one in a nursing home or something and everything's fine. Well, I'm speaking from experience. It's not fine. Okay. I would have to force myself to go to the nursing home to see my mother because my mother was in a different world altogether. And, you know, you know what we did today? Oh, we were out riding around in a car and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, Ma. Sure you were, you know. And I'd get so frustrated that, you know, she couldn't, you know.
Yeah.
I could. And then she got to the point where she didn't know who I was.
Yes.
She thought I was her grandson, you know. And I played the part as her grandson, you know, because, okay, whatever, you know. But it was just... brutal.
Well, you know what? I was going to say the word that came to my mind was torture. You know, I've had other people use that word to say it was torture to go see the person that, you know.
That you used to know.
That you used to know.
Right.
And that's where I think something that caregivers, that we don't talk a lot about, is that it really is the loss before a loss.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's the loss of the person as you knew them.
Right.
And so grieving kind of in a way happens before the person ever passes away, because you're grieving the loss of the, the mother, the father. And I think that's really important to kind of make people aware of, that you're allowed to have those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back in a couple minutes.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Join the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce and the Flemington Community Partnership for their Card Club networking event hosted by Northfield Bank on Thursday, September 28th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Northfield Bank's Flemington office right here on Main Street. For details and to RSVP, visit hunterdon-chamber.org or call 908-782-7115. See you there.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We're very privileged today to have with us Carol Ricard. And we were talking about stress for caregivers and different types of people who, you know, have folks that are not the way they used to be, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
Now, you have something you wanted to say. Go ahead.
I had something I wanted to say. I think besides making that time and doing that self-care, the other really critical thing that I would say each caregiver really needs to have, support. They got to have somebody support. And then when I think of NAMI and I think of just the work that what they offer people, you know, and it's great because nowadays you don't have to leave your house for the support. You know, you could get on your computer, you can get on a phone. But I think that's the other really thing is being around other people who are in similar shoes so that you can, one, have people validate your own feelings, and two, you learn. You know, you learn some tricks and strategies
of other people did and
that other people did or the problems they ran into that maybe you need to avoid. So I think they're the two S's.
Right.
Self-care when it comes to keeping stress levels low, self-care and support.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why support groups are, the support group we run is great because it helps people, you know. Some of us have gone through it and are supposedly at the end of, you know, the road with it. And others are just starting out. So, you know, it's very helpful. Now, how is it different for stress with someone with a mental health issue?
Stress with somebody with a mental health issue is kind of more complicated. Let me explain to you why. If you think of stress as a magnifying glass, all right, whatever is there under stress, it gets bigger.
Right.
And so for somebody with a mental health condition, I can have, say, schizophrenia and some of my symptoms could all be stable. Like the voices are gone, I'm not feeling paranoid. All those symptoms that would kind of make my illness be sort of acute can be stable until stress shows up. And the minute that stress shows up, it just flares up everything. And And it becomes this kind of snowball, because then as the stress comes and the symptoms come, then I start to kind of like not want to go do things, and then it just kind of unravels.
Right.
I've seen stress. Stress doesn't cause mental illness, but I've certainly seen it trigger kind of that reoccurrence.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for physical health, too. If you have migraines, your stress levels go up. Guess what happens to your migraines?
Sure.
Guess what happens? But it's the symptoms that go along with mental illness that interfere with our ability to function. And I say that, too, as a person living with a mental illness in wellness, that when my symptoms were severe, I couldn't function. You know, if my blood pressure's high, guess what? I could still function. I go to work. I go do this.
Right.
It goes along with me. Even my diabetes. But when it comes to mental health, that to me is one of the biggest challenges with stress.
Right.
And the impact it has.
Right. Yeah. It is. It's
Well, I was going to say, but the other thing is that many times people think it's their medication not working, or I had a woman who couldn't sleep, right? So doctor had her on, say, 100 milligrams of Seroquel at night. So the next morning she comes in, she says, I couldn't sleep last night, so I decided to take two of the 100 milligrams of Seroquel. I said, well, did you sleep? She said, no. And next day, did the same thing, took three. And I said, let me guess, you didn't sleep, right? Because here's the problem. Stress overrides medication.
Right.
If the stress is what's causing my symptoms to flare up, the medicine's not going to work.
Right.
It has to be what I do. And I think that's where, if we don't educate people about that, they're thinking, oh, this medicine's not working. How come it's not working? But not realizing that they have to do something themselves.
They have
too.
To do something besides just take the pill.
Yeah, yeah. Right. More than just taking a pill.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, my medicine's an important part of my sitting here with you all today. But guess what? It's only one part. It's all the other stuff that we have
to do.
With
all my complications, I'm on 10 medications, so I know exactly. High blood pressure, cholesterol, a touch of emphysema from my years of smoking, you know, yada, yada. So,
and if you think about it, there are symptoms that don't go away, and we learn just to manage them so they don't interfere with our life.
Exactly.
And that's the way I see stress. The greatest impact on mental health is when those symptoms flare up, they interfere with our ability to live life.
Right. You wanted to ask about...
Oh, let's talk about stress for younger people. You wrote a book,
a couple of books.
For kids and college students.
Well,
so let's talk about teenage
The teenage and the kids, you know, I mean, you could look at, read and see research across the country, and definitely on college campuses, there's a crisis, you know, going on with kids with increased depression and anxiety. And I kind of can kind of step back from that and say, how well are we preparing kids to be in college, and what tools are we giving them? And what's changed over the decades is I, myself, would be out running around, playing games, riding my bicycle, doing all these things that would let the pressure out of the bottle, so to speak, you know, But guess what? When you're a kid and you're sitting on your phone or you're sitting in front of your video, that's not going to do those things.
Right.
And so I feel like we set kids up, whether young kids going into high school or high schoolers going into college, that we really don't give them the tools in order to manage the stress. And we know that I can't tell you the number of people I've worked with that once they got to college, that stress got so overwhelming, it became the trigger, the beginning of the unleashing of the mental illness. Again, doesn't cause it, but guess what? It opens
it's
up the floodgates.
Right, it's a trigger.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. A lot more studying. You don't have your parents helping you at all.
Oh, my goodness. As somebody moved from, I went from California to the Midwest to go to college. And I was lucky because I had basketball. But if I had not had, even then, it was such a difficult, challenging transition for me that if I hadn't had people and supports around me there, I would have been in trouble, you know.
But, you know, unfortunately, it's a proven fact that some I won't say some, a lot of parents tell the kid in high school, well, you got to do this. You got to be on this team. You got to, you know, do that speech. You got to do that. You got to do this because you got to get a scholarship and blah, 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 blah. And there's a case in particular I know about. The student was a straight A student, honor roll, the whole nine yards. The vice president of the class, I believe, in sports, everything. Graduated high school, had scholarships, I think, to four different universities.
Wow.
Graduated high school and committed suicide.
Wow.
He found a note saying he didn't want to go to college. He wasn't ready for college. He was tired of school.
Yeah.
He wanted to get a job first and maybe go later on.
Yeah.
And, that's how he communicated.
Yeah.
That's sad.
No, that is sad. I mean, I think that that, when I think of stress and I think of mental health, that's the intersection. You know, that's really the, you know, the tremendous amount of pressure that kids in high school are under. And honestly, y'all just, I mean, my brain just suddenly thought about a couple months ago about the young girl from one of the high schools over in Mercer County.
Right.
And just,
there's another one here in Hunterdon County,
you know,
last December.
Right. Oh, in December, yes. Yeah. This was the beginning of December over in Mercer County. And just the intense and pressure, because there were, I did a workshop for the Trauma Loss Coalition of Mercer County.
Right.
And it was timely because it was on stress. And we did have some school kind of people there, and, you know, and just talking about the intense pressure that parents put on kids. And so the visual that I gave them, because I honestly, I'm a visual person, is that I put together this workshop for parents, and it was how to help your kids succeed in college. But truth of it was, it wasn't about college. Mm-hmm. It was about getting them to understand. And what I used was a picture of, oh, in the old days they used to do it for fire safety, where they showed you a tree and they showed you not to put all the extensions into the Christmas tree because everything could blow up.
Right.
That's what I did, because that's what parents are doing to kids.
And a lot of times the parents won't listen to the kids if they say they don't want to go to college or they don't want to do this.
Right.
The parents don't listen. Hey, you're going to go. Yeah, you're going to do this. You know.
Yeah. And, yeah. That's, you know, and that's the saddest thing to me, Larry, because, you know, kids can even be speaking up for themselves, but it's kind of that voice is silenced. And that's why I love the visual, because you can't argue with me that this is what you're doing to your kid. When you've got them plugged in 15 different places, it looks, it's actually, it's a disaster waiting to happen. And it's letting kids unplug themselves for so many different things that they need to do.
Right.
The one way I kept my sanity and kept my stress low in college, particularly my master's, was I was raised to be like an A student, you know, and I was a good student. But when I got to my master's, oh, my God. And what I told myself was, nobody's ever going to look at my grade point average. All that matters is that I graduate. Right? Like, all that mattered, that if I applied for a social work position, all they cared about, did I have my little LCSW? You know, did I have the requirements, my licensure? And I didn't have to have a 4.0 to get my license.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I just had to pass, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not embarrassed to say this. I remember my first licensing exam. I think the passing rate was a 72, and I got a 74.
Yeah. Well, you passed.
I passed. You know, and I think it's giving kids permission to not have to be so perfect.
Right. Right. You know, we all get angry at some time in our lives, all right?
Yeah.
What about anger, and how does it affect mental illness?
I love talking about anger, and you want to know why?
Why?
Because
tell us
so
why.
Many of us were raised that it's not good to feel angry. Depending upon your age, you know, you might have grown up with, oh, girls, don't get angry. Or this anger is a bad emotion. And one of the things I loved over the years of 27 years working with patients in hospital settings was getting them to see that the anger is an emotion. And emotion isn't bad. It's the behavior that we engage in around anger, and that anger is a pretty normal, natural emotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
And the more you try to pretend that you don't feel it, the more that it is just going to sit there waiting to get you.
Right. Yep. How about this one? If you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Yeah.
So don't express your anger.
Yeah. And the thing about that is, I may not come to you and say something mean to you, but that doesn't mean I can't let it out another way. And my favorite tool that I would teach and I use is called a dump and destroy. And what it is you take, you write your feelings down on a piece of paper, you don't read them, and you destroy them. Because it creates the release by writing.
Right.
When you read it, it reloads and refuels it all the way back in your brain again. And the destroying is, it's not meant to piss you off or to hurt you. I'm doing it to take care of me and to not kind of carry that around with me. And I also, the other one I love, Tracy, and I practice really is choose your battles.
Yeah.
You know, like, listen, am I going to get in an argument with, I mean, I could be angry at somebody, but I'm not going to change their mind. So why even waste my energy, you know, trying to change somebody who's not going to change? So I always say, choose your battles. But I love talking about anger because people feel like it's something they're not supposed to feel. It's like this taboo emotion.
Right.
Well, guess what? It's one of the most powerful emotions.
Yeah.
But if we don't manage it and we don't learn to manage it, then it ends up managing us.
Right.
Right. You know? And if you're not angry.
Go ahead.
You know, if you're not angry, then you don't care. Anger, right. Everyone needs to get angry once in a while.
And here's what I've learned. We all don't use the same vocabulary, right? You might get angry. There was a time when I would say, I don't get angry. You know what I would say?
Oh, really?
I get upset.
Oh, good for you, Carol. Yeah,
I get upset and angry, too.
Well, now I get angry. But we all have our vocabulary.
Right.
And different words mean
frustrated.
Different things. Yes. They're all different words that mean different sorts of flavors of what we're feeling.
Right.
No.
Yeah, it's... But, you know, the ironic thing is that I think a lot of times I've seen with people with mental illness who get angry, that inflates their illness also. You know, all right, I get mad or I get angry and it's over.
You let it go.
I let it go. It's over. You
know? Yep.
And especially with marriage, you know, it's like you said, choose your battles. Do I really want to fight this?
Yeah.
Out of hell with it. You know? It's not that important. You know?
I think your key, though, with people, at least with mental illness,
right,
is that they struggle to let it go.
Right.
And they hold on to it.
Right.
And that makes the illness work. You know, 'cause the other visual I give is luggage. And the more anger you're holding on to, the more bags you're dragging along behind you.
Right.
And it's going to wear you out.
Right.
You know? You're going to wear down.
Yeah, and it's, you know.
Carol, why don't we look at a quick technique? I've heard of, you know, counting to 10 for when you feel the anger rising up within yourself. What would be something good someone could do?
Well, I always teach a two-step method. You know, that one, you got to do something calming. And that means something very passive like counting to 10, walking in the other room, removing yourself, finding what works for you, because not the same thing works for everybody.
Right.
Counting
right.
to 10 might work for one person, but not the other. But the trick is find something you can do calming for 60 seconds, but you have to follow that up then with something you can do active for 60 seconds, like jumping jacks, like anything that involves literally moving muscles. So that's why writing is always good. It could be coloring because you're having to color, but literally, I've had patients where they didn't have anything, and it's okay, do sit-ups. Because we have to, one, think about that soda bottle, is stop the pressure from building. So if you notice it building, that's when the calming kicks in. But then you got to let some of it out that's already built up, and that's where the active comes in. And one of the best things you can do, nobody knows, is breathing. I call it stress kryptonite. because oxygen, when you get enough oxygen into your bloodstream, it neutralizes the stress hormones in your brain. And the only way you get enough oxygen in is when you do like deep breathing or belly breathing or yoga breathing. And that's because the loading dock is in the bottom of our lungs. So if we don't get the oxygen down there, we get less oxygen into our blood, which then doesn't neutralize the stress.
Right.
I call it stress kryptonite because it works as fast as kryptonite on Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the diaphragm. That's interesting.
Yeah. And the trick you could do is just put one hand on your chest and one hand on your belly and take a breath. I have people lay flat on the ground and put a book on their stomach. And when you blow, when you breathe in, you want to make your stomach rise so that the book moves.
Right.
Now, if you think about it, it's retraining ourselves to breathe the way we used to. Because look at a baby. Look at an infant the next time they're sleeping and notice what moves.
Right.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Do you get into any exercises? Now, supposing someone has justifiable anger and they need to find a way to communicate it so it's not going to turn into an argument. Do they need to do these things first?
Absolutely.
They got to calm down first.
Absolutely.
But then they still have to take care of communicating it, which can reactivate that all over again.
Which is sometimes, my point is when you're communicating, what's the purpose? Like if you're doing it just to make yourself feel better, honestly, I could tell you it's not going to work.
Right.
I remember having a girlfriend, a roommate, say something to me one time, and she said it, and I said, who did you say that for, you or me? Because if it's really about you, then it's probably not going to work. And that's where letting it out other ways, support groups, are a great way to let out that anger that you're having being a caregiver. Because you will be angry being a caregiver. It's letting it out. But let's say you have a problem in a situation.
Maybe it's at work or something like that.
Well, here's the most important part. When the feelings are high and the intensity is there, that's not the time to talk.
Right.
It might be one day. It might be one week so that you can create some distance so that when we have a conversation about it, it's not interlaced with emotion.
Right.
You know, and so there's a time and a place to communicate. And what I found a lot of people want to do is I want to talk about it and I want to talk about it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
makes perfect sense.
Not the time to talk about it. My secret is this. Don't tell somebody you don't want to talk about it, though. Say this to them instead. I'm not able to discuss it right now. See, if you tell me you don't want to, my brain is going to say, by God, you're going to talk to me about this. You don't want to. What do you mean you don't want to?
Right.
But if I say, I'm not able to talk about it right now, later, well, then you're going to let me step away because you know I'm not saying I don't care.
Right.
Different messages.
Right.
If someone with a mental health issue can speak about what their issues are, isn't it easier to address those issues then?
Yep. Yeah, we can't be mind readers. You know, and honestly, the most important thing is another rule I love to live by is don't assume. Ask. You know, so simplest thing, I learned this from my dad before he passed away. If I didn't do something, my dad wouldn't say, you didn't do this. You know, he'd say, is there a reason why this didn't get done? My girlfriend I was telling you about moved her mom into there. Well, she got a text, you know, and her brother came into the house. The house was a mess, you know, wet towels in the garage and this and this and this. And he just went on this attack accusing everybody of not doing what they were supposed to do. Well, the story was the towels were put in front of the freezer, which was defrosting at the time so that there wasn't water that ended up all over a puddle. And the clothes were in a pile in the garage because they were there to get washed. And if he had just come in and asked, why are there wet towels in the garage? It wouldn't have blown up into World War III, which is what it is now, because you have this one over here feeling attacked and this one over here. But to your point is if I have something, I can't expect you to read my mind. So important for me to be the person saying it. And not everybody does the best talking. communication isn't just about talking.
Right.
It's about kind of, it could be, that's what I'm a big, I love writing. Because writing, I can do it and I can let the emotion out, and then I can do a version that once I've dumped the emotion, I can get for what my real needs are. And I think that's the other trick is, you know, you can't know what somebody's needs are unless they share with you what it is or to support you. Even a caregiver, people are your caregiver. I encourage people. I've been on the other side having people with mental illness. And what do they say to their family? Well, my mom's doing this or this or this. I say, let them know what support is, how they can support you.
Right.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Now, if you have someone in your house or whatever, and they're experiencing anger, they have mental illness, and they're angry, and they're expressing it, and you can see they're starting to escalate, I guess you would use some of the same techniques to calm them down.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I would step away, or I would encourage them to, you know, what's something that you like to do? You know, but here's the thing. It takes two people to dance, too.
Right.
So when you have somebody who's really angry about something and they're kind of coming after you, the most important part would be to say, look, I'm not able to discuss this right now because their feelings are up to here, you know, and giving them a specific time later, you know, that we can talk about this might in fact help bring that person that's here down to your level.
Right. Because sometimes they might just say, well, why are you changing the subject?
Yeah.
They feel that's an invalidation of their anger.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would validate. I mean, I'm a big believer in validate the person first and say, look, you know, I'd say, look, Larry, I can, you know, it seems. The other word is don't tell somebody what they're feeling because then they'll get more pissed at you. But the word I learned from a great psychiatrist was it seems as though something's upsetting you or something's making you angry. To avoid the you word. Like, even that to me is an invisible finger. So if I say, it seems you're upset, Larry, or it seems, I'm still telling you what you're feeling, but it seems as though something has you upset or has you angry. That is me putting it on the table.
Right.
That's how I like to think about communication. It's how can I put something on the table so that I'm not shoving it at you, but you'll see it. Now, you may not pick it up and you may not do it, but at least I haven't shoved
it
at you.
You
have it out there.
Right.
You know, and that's where I find sometimes you got to put it out there five times in order for them to see it.
You know, that's true.
But those little tricks, Tracy, with the it seems something is upsetting you, that isn't going to make a person defensive as if I say to you, you know, well, you're upset. You know, or you're angry, or you're pissed
off,
or what's your problem, or, you know, and just those little changes in communication can make a really big difference.
And a lot of times it's hard to do.
Yeah.
Make those changes in communication, you know, because you're so used to saying, what the hell's the matter with you? You know, blah, 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 you know.
And you have it in your mind.
Right.
I remember taking some parenting classes and they said, you start with, I feel, not you're doing this wrong. If you, like you said, it's a finger, and it's so true.
Right.
If you can, but I teach a better I feel statement.
Okay.
Do we got time for it?
Sure.
Okay. So the better I feel statement is this, is I feel blank when, and then you don't even put the person as in you. So let's say, for example, you're supposed to be, taking the garbage out. You know, or you're raising your voice at me. I say to you know what? I feel, you know, unheard when it seems I'm not getting listened to instead of you're not listening to me. I'm a big believer that I feel when you blank, it doesn't work either.
Or when
because
someone, you could say.
You is in, it's still in there. So the person feels attacked.
Right.
But if you focus on the behavior and not the person, so I get upset when I come home and the garbage isn't taken care of. Not I get upset when And I even say, I don't even have to say, I feel. I don't even think saying the word, I feel angry. You know what? Because the feeling is the feeling. So if I just say, I'm angry or I'm upset, you know, when this happens or this happens, not that when you do this. And that was the formula that I learned. But it's just little things, you know, we can trade.
Right.
And I find validating somebody and their experience first, whether or not you agree with it, it opens the door to communication.
Right. Exactly. Right. We have to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. And today we're very, very privileged to have with us a good friend of mine, Carol Ricard. And she's a licensed clinical social worker, a tobacco treatment specialist, a wellness ambassador, writes books, many books.
Busy. Yes.
Very busy. Contributes to the Esperanza magazine and is the founder and CEO of Wellness U, Y-O-U, University,
yep.
LLC. And we were going to talk about CPR.
One more bow. One more arrow on that bow. Okay? CPR.
CPR. Yes. Well, I am a CPR instructor. I have been for 28 years, and it's the one thing that I think every person needs to know. And here's why. When I was in the fifth grade, I learned it. The very first year, I started teaching it, right? 4 years later, my mom collapsed at home, and the only reason that I was able to save her life was because my teacher had made us learn that in the fifth grade. We didn't even have the little dummies to practice on, you know. And the whole idea of this is that if you think about, I love to teach about CPR because, honestly, if you're at home and you call 911, how fast is somebody going to get to your house? Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. A person's brain can only go 4 minutes without oxygen before brain damage starts. 6 to 7, it's irreversible. And at 10 minutes, they're more or less going to declare me clinically dead. What CPR does is it's like a car. So we're like cars, right? In order for all of us to leave here today, we got to have gas in a gas tank, and we got to have a fuel pump that takes the gas to the engine. People have a fuel pump. It's called your heart. People also have a gas tank. It's called your lungs, and the gas is oxygen. And so what happens is when we do CPR, we are temporarily taking the place of what's not working so that we can keep all the organs and everything getting all the oxygen and gas it needs. And It's so simple these days because if you've watched or seen any of the American Heart Association, they say it's two steps. If you watch me fall to the ground, two steps is all you got to do. One, phone. Two, push on my chest. That if you even do that little bit, you give me a chance. Because what happens is when you push on the chest, you're actually circulating the blood. And I already have oxygen still left in my tank. So that's why bystander CPR is one of the most critical things, because that's where too many people die. You know, for some reason, their heart stops, and if there's nobody around there to kind of at least give them the chance of keeping oxygen going to everything, then guess what? There's no bringing back the engine. And that was the thing that allowed me. I didn't do it perfect. I didn't do it pretty. In fact, I couldn't remember the numbers back when I was in the ninth grade. All I remembered was if I gave my mom a breath, that there was enough oxygen in what I gave her, that would work. And my mom was a little different because she didn't have both things stop on her. My mom had really bad asthma, and she went into an asthma attack that caused her to go into respiratory arrest. And back then, It was so much more complicated because if one thing was missing, you did one thing. If both things were missing, nowadays it is the simplest thing. And anybody with any health issues, you know, like, I don't care if you got blood pressure, mental health, physical health. It's really the one thing that everybody should know how to do. And in schools, they are teaching kids. Like, there are kids that are going through schools that that's just something they're learning. You know, I just happen to be an oddity learning what I learned in the fifth grade. I never learned it anywhere else in school.
Right.
And it's really... It really is the gift of life that we can give to one another. And then just so you understand, those little machines that you see, those AEDs, or they say defibrillators, think of those as the jumper cables. Just like you would hook up the jumper cables to your battery. Mm-hmm. Well, these are jumper cables you hook up to the heart. And that little bit of a jump can get people's hearts starting again.
So, Carol, how much time would it take to learn, you know, the basics? Do you recommend that somebody come for a couple of sessions, or can they learn in one session?
Oh, no, people can learn in one session. You know, there's a couple. I've taught for American Heart Association for 20-something years. And the Heart Association, you know, is always, there's a couple classes. There's if you need it for your work, which means you have to take the course and get tested. But then there's this other class called Friends and Family, mm-hmm. and it's just for people who want to learn. And even online, if people will just do a quick, even online thing, mm-hmm. they can watch the video of the call, the phone and push, you know, the two steps that we can do because.
So it's on YouTube.
Yeah.
When are you doing your next one?
Well, I actually set my classes up individually, you know.
Okay.
So I've had grandparents call me and they did like a baby shower gift, and we went over, you know, had everybody around that was going to babysit, and we had babysitting there. I'm actually going to do the group at for the staff at the Getting Together Center coming up. We're going to do a CPR training coming up for the staff there.
When is that?
That's where I saw it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Oh.
It's this month.
I don't know. I don't know. But you know, it's the hospital, you know, offers the classes. They do the friends and family class for that. For me, my love of teaching CPR is, like, I will teach one-on-one. You know, like, I don't want people to not be able. If you want to learn, I want you to learn. You know, is kind of my motto. Not because you didn't have enough people, so they canceled the class, sort of thing.
Right.
Right. But yeah, it is the one thing. If you're especially if you have children, you have a swimming pool. Like, there are a couple things that even tilt the scale more in your direction. That this is something that you really need to know.
Babysitters.
Right. Definitely.
Yep. Yep.
All right, Carol. If somebody wanted to reach out and get more information about any of what we talked about, how would they do that? Do you have an email address?
I got email. I mean, honestly, they could give me a call or a text even.
All right.
Because it's easier. It's easier to get in touch with me. And all you got to do is remember 888, so 888, and then the word life tools.
Okay.
I think it's 543-3866 is the numbers, but just Life Tools, 888 Life Tools.
Okay.
And a call, if I'm not around, just leave me a voice message. When's best to get hold of you? That's
Can you
usually
text
the easiest.
To that?
Yep.
Too?
Yep, it goes right to my cell phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
And okay. Okay. Website or?
I do have a website. It's welluniversity.com, and it's W-E-L-L. YOUNIVERSITY. So as in welluniversity.com.
Carol, I can't thank you enough. Time has flown by.
Oh, I love coming here with you.
And we love having you.
Yes, thank you, Carol. I always learn so much.
And we really appreciate it. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. We'll see you again next week. Same time, same station.
USA Radio News.
President Trump will make a nationally televised address Tuesday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. The president plans on discussing border security and the partial government shutdown. As far as what's actually going on at our southern border, National Border Patrol Council President Brandon Judd tells Fox News the president is giving them all the resources they need.
He's listened to leadership within CBP. He's listened to the rank and file agents that are actually patrolling the border. He's putting forth exactly what they have told him.
Judd also believes
they know that 2020 is coming up. They want to win that election desperately. And so if he actually drives down illegal immigration, then it's going to be another win for him.
In Nantucket, Massachusetts, Kevin Spacey is pleading not guilty to charges of sexual assault. The actor allegedly groped an 18-year-old busboy in Nantucket back in 2016. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed-rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
Hey, Charlie Jones here. The new year is finally upon us, and to make 2019 a better year, it all starts with a good night's rest. And right now, MyPillow's best offer ever has been extended. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the end of the year special for the lowest price MyPillow has ever offered for their 4-pack, including free shipping. And their 60-day money-back guarantee has been extended through March 1st. Best price ever, free shipping, extended money-back guarantee. That's MyPillow.com. Click on the end of the year special to get 2 premium MyPillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows for their lowest price ever. And be sure to use my promo code USA.
Flu cases are continuing to rise across the country, and many experts believe this is just the beginning. Fox News medical contributor Dr. Mark Siegel tells Fox News that the flu will continue to be widespread across the nation.
We're just starting to see it peak. So over the next month or 2 months is when you're going to see most of it. Influenza-like activity is very heavy right now on the East Coast and across the southern United States.
A slow and careful withdrawal of troops from Syria is now being planned. USA Radio Network's Wendy King has the details.
Top White House aides say U.S. troops won't leave northeastern Syria until the Islamic State is defeated and allies are protected. That means a pause to a withdrawal which was initially thought to have been completed within a few weeks. National Security Advisor John Bolton says there's now no timetable.
We're going to be discussing the president's decision to withdraw, but to do so from northeast Syria in a way that makes sure that ISIS is defeated.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
America's built and based on liberties and freedoms. Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Ignite your liberty. Sharing plans starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple, and no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To learn how you can